And here we go. Welcome. I am Matt. This is the Anarchist Investor Live, coming at you every day at noon Eastern on the Ungovernable channels, talking about contrarian investment, markets, the economy, where to put, save, and grow your money so it doesn't get stolen and it actually does something for you as opposed to making other people wealthy. So that being said, I'm going to pull the banner down. A quick reminder, the algo doesn't like me, so do all the good things. Subscribe, upvote, give me a like, throw some comments in. I am live every single day, actually Monday through Friday. So when I am here, I want to hear from you. So whatever you're looking at, whatever you are thinking about what I'm talking about investment-wise or things that maybe I'm not even looking at, I want to hear from you. So throw it into the comments. Let's have a conversation and talk through it. And that's how we all can grow and learn together. So with that, on the hold screen, coming into the live, I had the news out of Yahoo Finance, I guess, late yesterday, actually maybe middle of the day yesterday. Jerome Powell confirmed his commitment to the Federal Reserve cutting interest rates later this year. Well, why would you need to cut interest rates, Jerome, later this year? What if you're getting inflation down to 2% and he's calling it a bumpy path? Why might we have to cut interest rates later this year if you've gotten the interest rate to a position that it's actually bringing it down to 2%? That essentially means you had to overshoot, right? Which he's been completely transparent, I guess I'll call it. They wanted a restrictive rate, right? Which means he knew for a fact that they were going to overshoot. You know why he knows that? Not just because it was their intent, because it's what they always do. Central planned, Federal Reserve, central bank kind of economies and marketplaces, they always over and undershoot. And they're always either way early or way late when they do things. And it's one of the reasons why someone who's a free market advocate like myself thinks that this is just a fool's errand. It's just manipulation, right? It's you're not reacting to actual economic forces. You're reacting to those under the stress and the strain of these morons that think they know better than the actual natural laws of economics as they play out within a system. So what you're going to get, and what we'll talk about today, is what you're going to get is you're going to get rate cuts later in the year because the stock market wants rate cuts. But what you're also going to get is you're going to get rate cuts later in the year because these jokers knowingly overshot on the rate, and they know full well that they're causing a recession in the near future. And they knew full well back in 2019 when they cooked up this plan, and actually before that, leading up to 2019, when they were talking about how they couldn't basically affect any change and create inflation, when they were actually trying to create inflation, they cooked up this entire plan over the 20 teens in order to get us here, okay? And what does this look like? It looks like a recession in the next 12 to 18 months, okay? It could be as early as late this year, but again, these things take a long time to play out. So anyone who tells you they know when the recession is coming, they're full of crap. You can't tell that you're in a recession until you're already in it, right? Like you can't prognosticate these things with any kind of certainty because there's so many moving parts. It's also part of the reason why centrally planning an economy is a fool's errand. But that being said, the casino is up today, euphorically, because the cocaine has been promised once again, okay? The dealer is back on the pulpit and he's saying, I'm going to rein that magical free money or, you know, easier access money down upon the economy and things are going to be all hunky-dory. Well, I have news for Federal Reserve Jerome Powell, and he probably already knows this, and everyone else who's active in the marketplace. He's going to cut rates and things are going to get worse afterward. You know how I know that? Because that's the way it always happens. They always cut rates and then things get worse afterward because the effects of rate cuts don't fully hit the economy immediately. In fact, there's a little bit of like a front running that happens, but then the full effect of those rate cuts isn't experienced within the economy until 6, 12, 18, 24, sometimes 36 months after those rate cuts hit, depending on what areas of the economy are the most vulnerable, because some of them just move very slowly at a glacial pace. Other ones move very quickly, and they're able to respond and adjust very quickly. Okay. And so what's going to happen is they're going to cut rates, and they're probably going to do it 2-3 times between the end of the year and the beginning of next year. And then they're going to see where things stand. And what they're going to find out is prices are going to continue to drop because this disinflationary process, okay, is going to continue to play out even while they're cutting interest rates. And that disinflationary process will be felt a little bit differently than the inflationary process was felt. You're going to see things disinflate and cause the numbers look like, you know, disinflation or even deflation. Meanwhile, other things will continue to go up. So, for instance, I can foresee food prices going back up at the same time that the Federal Reserve is telling you that inflation is at their target at 2%, or that it's even lower than their target at 2%, and they need to cut interest rates even more, because food actually reacts a lot faster than things like real estate. Real estate is slow. It takes a long time for interest rates to fully be affected or to be kind of consumed and digested by that marketplace. And then it takes a long time for, you know, rate cuts to basically be consumed and digested by that marketplace and for pricing to adjust. You're going to see a scenario where once real estate and really the vast majority of inflation recently has been due to things like energy and real estate. Once you see the adjustment in those two sectors, you could see, you know, PCE and CPI prints and all these, you know, beautifully manipulated inflation gauges look like we're at 2% or even lower than 2%. Meanwhile, eggs are still going through the freaking roof. And I don't have the news article today, but we've already seen yet another supply issue being created because one of the largest egg producers in the entire country, maybe even the world for that matter, just found bird flu amongst like 1.6 million egg-laying hens. And I think they're going to have to cull the entire population. I could be wrong. They might be able to kind of like sequester certain areas, but it's obviously going to cause a supply disruption. So that has to factor into the actual inflation. Now, that being said, it's not traditional inflation in the sense of too much money chasing too few goods, like over a long period of time. That's more of a supply disruption type of inflation that's caused. And something I've been arguing all along is that a lot of the inflation that we've had has really been supply disruption. We have yet to begin to feel the inflation that's associated with the cash and the money printing that was done in 2020 and 2021. And the reason why is multiple fold. The velocity of money being relatively low leading into that, meaning it flows through the economy slower than it has in the past. And in fact, that's been dropping over the last like 30 years. It also has to do with how that money was deployed. A lot of the money was monetized debt spending through the federal government. All that money doesn't get spent at once. It's still being spent now. There's still, you know, troughs and troughs of fat pork barrel money that's flowing through the economy that's coming from that, you know, $4 trillion in deficit spending that was done in 20 and 2021 under former President Trump and current President Biden. And all of that money is taking time to filter through the economy. And so you're seeing some of the effects of that monetary inflation, but you're also seeing the ebb and flow of supply disruption from lockdowns and all kinds of other stuff and the bullwhip effect that's being affected throughout the supply chain. So how anyone in their right mind can sit there and have the not just the impetus, just the ridiculous, like, I don't even know what the word for it is, like the incredulity of being able to be like, oh, well, yeah, I know what's happening. Like, you know, we're really on top of it. We're raising and cutting rates appropriately based off of data, and we're very data centric. And it's like, dude, you're full of crap. This is like you just make it up as you go, right? And that's exactly what's happening right now. And so what's going to happen is they're going to cut rates because it just feels like it's time to cut rates, but also because they know they always cut rates late. Well, they're already late. They were late on raising rates. Now they're going to be late on cutting rates. Okay. How do I know that? It takes time for interest rate cuts to filter through the economy. So what else am I looking at? Well, if I pull up a couple of other news articles, let's look at the state of the consumer, which, by the way, We, you know, the United States is a consumer-driven economy. We used to make stuff. We don't. We just buy stuff now. What we make is U.S. treasuries. We make debt. That's basically what we make. Let's see. Let's check in on the auto loan industry. Okay. This is a story on from Liberty Street Economics. It's about auto loan delinquencies as they rev up. As you can notice from this chart right here, as of 2023, they are beginning to move higher than 2 and getting to the point of about 2.5% delinquency rate. Okay. This is beginning to make up the stagger. For a long period of time, because of the money printing, you had people paying down debt, which isn't necessarily inflationary until after that debt gets resolved and then new debt gets created, right? So that's why that inflationary pressure kind of gets deferred. But in the meantime, from 2020 to 2022, you had all these deference, forbearance, debt forgiveness, and all this other stuff that essentially caused the delinquency rates on a lot of consumer debt to look way, way better than it was, you know, in 2019 and everything like that before the COVID crisis. So that's beginning to catch up with people. And in fact, one of the guys that I follow, the YouTube channel is called Car Questions Answered. I mean, he was laying out how ridiculous some of these loans have been over the last like 2-3 years since COVID lockdown. I mean, you had people that had negative equity in their car, roll that negative equity into a new car, meaning the car itself that they were buying, they were already going to be underwater because of the depreciation and value of that new car. But then on top of that, they were adding negative debt that they owed on negative equity that they owed on the prior car into that new loan. All right. And then on top of that, they were also paying these like market adjustment fees of like 5-10 grand on top of the price of an already inflated vehicle. So you're talking about people that took out auto loans for like 70 G's. And the moment they drove off the lot, they were like negative 35 grand. And now they're locked into like a 6 or 7 year payment plan, paying $1,000 a month on their car. And they essentially just lit 35, 40 grand on fire. And these aren't wealthy people. These are like at best middle class, you know, basically the middle third of income earners, just lighting 40 G's on fire. And he was like, a lot of those cars are sitting at auction lots right now because they got repoed because the people couldn't continue to afford $1,000 a month for a car. That delinquency rate is rising. Who's it rising amongst? Well, as you could imagine, it's lower income earners and younger people, right? So Gen Z, millennials, they have the highest uptick in these delinquency rates. And also, if you're in the bottom half of income earners, you're seeing the highest increase in that delinquency rate runup. Okay. So that's auto loans. So now let's look at something else. There's all kinds of debt. We love creating debt in this country. Okay. Let's look at credit card delinquencies. Credit card delinquencies. they slipped a little in February. I will constantly talk about how financial headlines are completely manipulative. Like if you listen to anyone in the main press outlets, these headlines are always manipulative. They never lead you to what the actual truth is of the story. Okay. They're telling you that credit card delinquencies slipped, meaning they actually dropped a little bit, but charge-offs continue to rise, meaning the number of people that were behind on their payments dropped a little bit, but the amount of money that's being charged off, essentially, again, lit on fire by banks saying that it's unrecoverable debt, is still rising. Okay. What they neglect to tell you in the headline, or at least what they neglect to tell you and then expect you, I guess, to read in the article, as if people read articles anymore, they tell you that in February, which is what this data is from when they're reporting it in March, you typically see a drop in delinquencies. And the drop in delinquencies isn't as much as it normally is in a normal February. The reason being, people load up their credit cards in December, November, December for Christmas. And then in January and February, they begin to pay them off. And so you also have things like people getting new jobs or transferring jobs. They end up getting money or bonuses at the beginning of the year from the prior year. and they can then pay down those debts or get, you know, get caught up. And so delinquencies typically drop a little bit anyway, but February 2024, they dropped less than they normally would. What they're also not necessarily telling you in the headline, and the overall situation is getting worse because delinquencies are at the point or worse now than they were before COVID. So remember I told you I had that period of time where people actually didn't have to pay on certain loans or they got stimulus money. It allowed them to catch up and have a lower delinquency rate. Well, now we're at the point where our delinquency rate is at or above what it was prior to all that stimulus money and everything. So that's all gone. And now we're, you know, as bad or worse now moving forward. Okay. Is that going to get any better? Probably not. It's probably going to continue to get worse. And the other thing you have to ask yourself is, as I'm going through these like financial stories, does a quarter point interest rate cut by the Federal Reserve in May, does that really change this? Does the Titanic all of a sudden not continue sinking because there's a quarter interest point rate cut? No, it doesn't, right? And again, you have to understand from my perspective, I don't think the central bank should be meddling in this stuff in the first place, right? But if they're going to do it, I'm going to call attention to how they're screwing up, right? And this is obviously them just kind of making stuff up as they go, because if they cut by a quarter point, it's not going to save these people, right? Credit card interest rates have already gone up 5%+. And so they were hovering at somewhere like between 12 and 14% for the average borrower, you know, in 2019. Now you're talking, you know, 20, 25%. Some people, if they had bad credit, they're at like 30, 40% in credit cards. They're like at that. I don't even know if the Consumer Protection Bureau caps interest rates on credit cards anymore. But I mean, could you imagine if you're paying 30% interest annually on a credit card balance and those balances have been rising? A quarter point interest rate cut is not going to fix that problem anytime soon, if at all. What else are we looking at? Mortgages. What do we have in terms of mortgage delinquencies? If I can find the article here. All right. So Housing Wire reports mortgage delinquencies increase for the second straight quarter. This is as of the beginning of February 2024. So it's looking back at Q4 of 2023. And what you see is that mortgage delinquencies are beginning to creep up too. All right. Now, the story with mortgage delinquencies in terms of individual, like, you know, single family homes, isn't nearly as bad as these other areas. I also make a distinction between good debt and bad debt. Okay. That's the rich dad, poor dad kind of dividing line. Okay. A mortgage on a single family home, technically in the, you know, rich dad perspective is bad debt because it doesn't create any kind of cash flow. It's actually a drain on your cash flow. But that being said, this is much less of a bad debt situation than credit cards and auto loans. Okay. What you're also finding is that people aren't refiing their mortgages, which is the way that they used to be able to free up cash flow. So their consumption in the future is dropping because of that, because they can't refinance at lower rates. And on top of that, a lot of people have begun to tap home equity lines of credit in order to pay for things that they would normally pay for, whether it be, you know, through that refinancing process or, you know, just average everyday, you know, kind of like, or not average everyday, like emergency expenses that have to be paid for. They're not doing it in cash. They're not doing it on credit cards. They're actually tapping home equity lines of credit. Okay. That's not exactly a good scenario, but at least it's less negative, I'll call it, than the delinquency rates that are rising in the credit card and the auto loan space. Something also to note is that credit cards and auto loans, typically regional banks, smaller than the big, you know, multinational, international type banks, regional banks are highly leveraged towards that. Okay. Individual home loans, regional banks have a little bit of exposure to that, but actually that's more the dominion of these big banks, right? And so you're noticing, if you kind of follow the news flow, the bad news in the financial markets doesn't have much to do with, like, you know, the Citigroups and the JP Morgans of the world. It has to do with regional and small community banks. Okay. New York Community Bank Corp, which is kind of like a redundancy, almost went out of business a couple of months ago, right? And that was after they took on some of the pieces of some of these other now defunct regional banks. So the acquirer of the pieces couldn't even hold things together, right? That's also going to continue to get worse. Why is it going to continue to get worse? Because let's check in on commercial real estate. Commercial real estate, everyone know, is a known in terms of the risks associated with this market. Well, right now, in 2024, and this is the headline out of the Washington Post, last year was bad for commercial real estate. 2024 could be worse. They should remove could be. It's gonna be worse, okay? Here's why. Last year, before I even talk about the $900 billion in loans that are coming due this year, last year there was something like a couple hundred billion in loans that got deferred or like temporary rolled over to this year to see if things get any better, okay? But you have to understand that the average estimate in the commercial real estate space is that a lot of these urban pieces of commercial real estate, these high-rise buildings and whatnot, they could be anywhere from 30 to 70% overvalued. And these developers, when they have, or these operating companies, when they own these pieces of property, it's typically an individual like business entity. Okay. And so that property, if things go awry, they could just step away from it. Just stop paying the bill, stop paying the loan, and just walk away. In which case, if that bank has to eat a loss associated with what it costs to sell that thing versus what they wrote the loan at originally, you know, you could be talking about 30, 40, 50, 60, 70% losses on what's now, between last year, a couple hundred billion. Now what comes due this year is $900 billion. That's over $1 trillion in commercial real estate. That might only be worth like $300 billion or $400 billion. Now, obviously, that's the extreme case. Like on average, say it's 40%, right? You're talking about a lot of regional banks taking, you know, essentially lighting $400 billion in cash on fire. Now you know why the Fed pre-bailed out the financial system in 2020. That now you also understand why, you know, a lot of the inflation that we've had up until now hasn't necessarily been that cash printing, because the cash printing was done preemptively. They knew this stuff was coming. They saw this avalanche coming. And I'm going to tell you right now, it's still not going to be enough, because they're going to ease up on their rate policy and think that it's going to begin healing these wounds, and this will not heal these wounds. There will be tons of cash that will be basically, you know, disappear because they'll be written off on the books. And that cash that disappears from the economy is going to cause actually the inverse of what they're expecting. They're going to talk about how inflation's moving to 2% or whatever. We could end up in this like depreciation area, in which case those interest rate cuts that Jerome Powell is promising aren't just going to be 2 or 3 interest rate cuts. He's going to be cutting full points again. We're going to be back down at zero, and they're going to resume quantitative easing, right? If the stars do not align for the Federal Reserve, which is always the way it happens, then stuff's going to hit the fan, and that's the track record. That's the track record of the Federal Reserve. That's almost, they always have this like Goldilocks scenario, and it never happens. Right. And people are investing money and gambling in the casino, expecting Goldilocks to show up. And it's just not going to happen. OK, so that's what I'm looking at right now. Now let's go look over the markets and see how things are reacting. I already told you the casino loves this, right? Like whenever they're promised, like, you know, fairy tale type stuff, they love how the story goes, and they love putting other people's money to work, buying, you know, risky shit when they're being told that, oh, you know, Papa Jerome Powell is going to take care of them and everything's going to be all right. Right. The S&P bounced today. Again, at some point in time, this thing is going to make a very strong reversal. Okay. We saw it happen lead up into 2022, where you had the huge run up from the COVID stimulus money and dropping interest rates and everything like that. You had a run up and then hard pullback, right? Same thing's happening right now. And if you notice, I'm looking at this on a monthly chart, the S&P index. Okay. You saw the all-time high get put in at 48.26, and that's when we fell back during 2022. Okay. The relative strength when we put in that all-time high was somewhere around like 75 to 78. Right now, we're hovering and almost kind of like starting to flatline just below 70, which means if we end up putting in this new all-time high in the S&P at a lower relative strength, that's typically a turnaround signal. Doesn't always happen. It's like a possibility, okay? But this could be the ultimate top, all right? In which case, the rate cuts will give you probably one last push to try and get to a new high, and it'll be on even lower relative strength, and then the bottom falls out, okay? And it's because all these economic forces, the Federal Reserve is always way behind them. They don't know how to account for all of them. They all happen on different time frames. And so essentially what it amounts to is essentially stock market manipulation that has a spillover effect in the economy. And essentially, like I showed you in the delinquency rates and stuff like that, who it ultimately hurts the most is like the bottom half of earners, okay? That also tends to be the people that are the less financially literate. And so they fall prey and victim to these things all the time, right? Every single economic cycle. And the same thing's playing out right now. So the casino's up. Everyone's having a good time. Dollar's a little bit lighter today because the dollar reacts to these interest rate, you know, FUD kind of stories sometimes. And so the dollar is down. We played around a little bit above that medium-term resistance line over the top of the dollar at about 104.77 in the DXY, and we've since pulled back down below that. Doesn't necessarily mean that the dollar is not going to go back up again. It just means that it's taking a little bit of a pause after this big move where it, I mean, within the last, let's see, since March 11th has moved from 102 all the way up to almost to 105. It printed above 105. That's a huge move for the DXY at least. And again, remember, I talk about this all the time. The DXY just compares the dollar's value to other fiat toilet paper that's out there running around from other countries. Okay. And so the dollar might be weakening against those currencies, but that doesn't necessarily tell you what's happening to the overall fiat currency market. Well, we know that it's the intent of central banks to inflate away the value within those currencies. How do we know that? Gold and silver remain strong. Gold is taking a little bit of a break today, but it's not like it's down big. It was actually up at one point overnight. It's down like fractionally, maybe a couple of bucks an ounce. It's still over 2,300. Silver continues to run higher. Silver was a little bit higher than it is now overnight as well, but silver's at almost 27 and a quarter. I wish I had it with me. I mean, I bought an entire tube of rounds two Fridays ago, and I essentially paid 27 an ounce. I'm already in the money. That's crazy. Normally with gold and silver, when you pay a premium on those ounces that you're purchasing, you got to wait months for a return because these things typically just move slowly. Silver is ramping right here. And I would expect it to at least try and challenge $28, if not $30 here in fairly short order. The longer people are talking about lowering interest rates, the more likely it is that these like inflation sensitive names rally. And it's not necessarily because inflation is on the horizon, but again, it can also be that, you know, the economy could fall apart. The dollar could increase in value relative to other currencies out there. And at the same time, you could still have commodities move higher. We had that happen during 2022. All right. And because there's also a risk premium, right? I wrote about it the other day and I talked about it yesterday. Gold's warning to everyone right now is that it's not necessarily just an inflation warning. In fact, in the near term, it's some kind of financial catastrophe coming. Hopefully, again, knock on wood, hopefully it's not World War III. All right. Oil is taking a little bit of a break today, but again, same story. It's rallied hard as of recently, and so it's pulled back a little bit today while everyone is kind of putting money to work buying some of these overpriced stocks that are in the marketplace. And this thing could get even more overpriced. If I just go back, I know I'm spending a lot of time on the stock market, and I really don't care to put much money to work here. But this thing, if I show you the S&P 500, and I look at this on like a daily or a weekly kind of chart, I mean, this is a moonshot kind of move in the index, and it could keep going. And the reason why it could keep going is because things like the AI bubble could pop, and there could be a rotation into other types of stocks that have been not loved up until now. But that says nothing as to whether or not the economy is going to continue being okay. It just means that there's money that has to move somewhere, right? And part of the manipulation of the stock market, and the reason why I don't like it, is because a huge base of the amount of money that goes in there is dumb money. And it's dumb money in the form of 401ks and IRAs and things like that, that are all passive investing. They're all, basically money that gets taken out every single month and put into stocks that most people don't even know what they hold, right? They get put into mutual funds. The mutual funds have, you know, a few dozen stocks in there, and people don't even know what they're invested in it. And that forms the base for what happens, which is why the assumed direction of the stock market is up and to the right, right? It's assumed that it's going to continue going higher. And the reason why isn't because of good economics. It's not because these companies are doing amazing things. It's because for the most part, they have a captive audience of people that are just dumping money blindly into the stock market every single month. Well, that money has to go somewhere. So even if, and if I'll pull up, say, like NVIDIA is actually having an okay day today, but even if NVIDIA has topped out here, this is the ultimate high in NVIDIA, doesn't ever put in a new all-time high for a number of years, it begins to fall off, you could still continue to see the stock market continue on despite that, despite bad economic conditions, because money just has to go somewhere. And in many cases, like in the 401k case, in the passive investing and automatic investing world, that money has to stay captive within a certain set of investments. It's also why people fall prey and fall victim to Wall Street, because, you know, a lot of Wall Street's money is it can move around, right? If you have money in a 401k, I mean, you have a limited number of options, and those options are pretty much within a very small, you know, portion of the investment world, right? It's within the Wall Street ecosphere. And so that money has to be put to work somewhere, and it causes these huge overvaluations and these huge bubbles. It's one of the underpinnings of these bubbles that happen. And it's one of the underpinnings of how, you know, Wall Street bankers, AKA banksters, steal money from you. Okay. And this is probably going to happen after the rate cuts start. History shows you that the worst losses that happen when the economy and specifically the casino and the stock markets start to move lower in a recession or a depression, the worst losses happen after the first rate cut, because everyone thinks that that's going to solve the problem, when in reality, it's just putting a Band-Aid on a gigantic gaping wound that continues to kill the patient, right? What else am I looking at? All right, crypto today. Bitcoin is catching a bid. And like I said yesterday, man, like, I don't advocate trading, but every so often lightning hits my brain here, okay? Bitcoin caught support at the bottom in this range that we continue to watch at roughly 64,900. It's now back in the middle of the range, almost to the top end of the range, actually, at just under 68,000, okay? I would actually expect Bitcoin here to continue to clunk around in this range between 64,900 and 69,000. Until we get a little bit more clarity on that rate cut, or until that rate cut becomes more apparent that it's like imminent. Okay. And if it's imminent that rate cut is going to happen in 3 weeks, give or take, at the next FOMC meeting, this wedge that you see Bitcoin creating is either going to resolve up or it's going to resolve down. And so, you know, that basically comes into play, like, within a week, actually a week to 2 weeks, you'll probably have a resolution here in Bitcoin as to whether or not it's moving higher or moving lower. And the case for it moving lower would be if there's no imminent expectation that the Fed is going to cut in the end of February, beginning of May. if that timeline gets pushed back to June or even later, I think you would see Bitcoin pull back. And my longer term prognosis here is it pulls back to probably about like the mid 50s before it finally gets that rate cut and pushes through. Now, if the rate cut comes earlier because something happens, another bank falls apart, there's some kind of funding problem somewhere in the financial system, which gold is telling you is coming. Might not be tomorrow, but it's coming, right? If it happens earlier than later, you're going to get that rate cut sometime sooner, and Bitcoin's going to head to 100,000. And actually, it's my thought process that wherever Bitcoin ends up topping out here in this move is probably going to be the long-term top for a while. Because like I said, Bitcoin is a NASDAQ stock. It's not, people think it's money or it's currency. It's not the way it's traded right now. That might be what it becomes long-term, right? What it is right now is it's a NASDAQ stock because it tracks right along with the NASDAQ and the tech and the semiconductor indexes within the NASDAQ, which means it's sensitive to interest rates and everything else that tech stocks are sensitive to. And so if you get that, if the market gets its cocaine, guess what? Bitcoin's going to be linked at the hip with the NASDAQ and some of those tech names, and you'll probably end up seeing, you know, Bitcoin ramp. If it takes a little while and the market throws a fit to try and induce the rate cut, you'll see Bitcoin fall back probably the mid 50s. So you have another entry point, and then you're going to get a ramp probably up to the mid 90s or 100K. And then my thought is that's probably the long-term high. You won't see that number again for maybe ever. If this is a .com kind of situation, Bitcoin finds its feet, continues to develop apps on top of the platform, continues to be one of the strongest ecosystems out there. You could see Bitcoin back at 100,000 a coin in, you know, 10, 15 years once the whole industry, as well as the economy in general, refines its footing. Okay. That's like a worst case, or that's actually technically a best case scenario, because the other case scenario is once things fall apart, certain blockchains might end up taking market share from Bitcoin and overtaking it. In which case, Bitcoin may never get back to 100,000 per coin. All right. But that's a little far afield. I mean, we're talking 5, 10, 15, 20 year prognosis, right? Like that's like trying to figure out what the world looks like in 20 years and having no context for it, right? But in the near term, that's what we're looking at. Within the next week to 2 weeks, we'll probably have some resolution as far as which direction Bitcoin's headed, up or down. And a lot of that is going to have to do, unfortunately, with what the Federal Reserve does. The rest of the crypto ecosystem, for the most part, is up. So a lot of the main, you know, layer ones and other competitors are up, as well as, you know, in sympathy with Bitcoin. So I actually don't talk enough about Ethereum. There's like this theory now all of a sudden percolating that like Ethereum's going to zero, and it has to do with the relative performance of it versus Bitcoin. I would watch out with that one, because everyone wants Bitcoin to be essentially like the measuring stick for the entire, you know, crypto space. I would watch out with that, because measuring anything versus Bitcoin and Bitcoin being like that litmus test for whether or not something is outperforming or underperforming might work over a short period of time, but prognosticating that Ethereum is going to zero versus, you know, because of its relative performance versus Bitcoin, I think is ridiculous. I think what you actually have to look at is you have to look at these cryptos, each and every one of them, you know, their relative performance versus the overall crypto space. So total market cap within the crypto space, as well as, I mean, you know, a lot is really being found out really quickly here about fee structures and how these things scale. And they're so new that how those fee structures do or don't scale is going to be a huge determinant of how successful, you know, these are over the long term. And so a perfect example, Bitcoin Cash has been extremely strong over the last couple of months. And the reason being is because it's one of those Bitcoin offshoots, and it has a more, you know, fee-friendly story that goes along with it. And the assumption is that scalability is a lot easier with that system, as well as the speed and kind of the user-friendly, you know, usability standpoint. We'll see if that actually ends up being true. But that being said, if you're looking at one of these cryptos and you're only judging it versus Bitcoin, I think you're taking a very myopic view of this space in general. So Solana's up, Avalanche is up, Ripple is up, but it's been kind of like flattish for a while now. So hasn't really been a darling as of late. And a couple of these other cryptos are also rallying off of this. Doge is up 5% today. Again, I don't know if I would touch Doge with a 60-foot pole, but I mean, whatever. I mean, if you want to take a flyer on it, I mean, I would not make it a main component of my portfolio if I was holding, you know, I do hold a basket of crypto. Doge is not in it. I do not have a piece of Doge, but if you're going to make it a piece of your portfolio, I would not be a Doge maximalist by any stretch of the imagination. Hive is up. Hive is trying to get back above that magic 40 cent per coin line, per token line. And so I do have a good size position in Hive. I actually think in that scenario where we have a dot-com bubble kind of bust within, you know, not just the economy, but also kind of the blockchain crypto world, I think Hive is going to be one of those ecosystems that in 10 or 15 years will be what actually makes it, right? Like to the end. And they will be one of the most robust that's out there. They're also one of the most decentralized that's out there. So that's why I keep talking about them. And I'm streaming right now on Vim.tv, which is essentially kind of like a Twitch alternative on Hive, on the Hive blockchain. And so I'm a huge believer in Hive. I think they're going to be very successful, especially if they're given the opportunity to continue to grow through some of these dark times that almost always happen in economic cycles. Helium, mobile, IoT, these are kind of like they've fallen out of favor a little bit over the last couple of months. But I continue to use Helium for my cellular, as well as run an IoT node on the Helium network. IoT isn't really focused on by Helium right now. They're more so focused on the mobile network and getting the cellular system up and running. I actually think this is a place where a good buy-in. If you're starting to use the Helium cellular plan and starting to accrue mobile tokens, I had been moving mobile tokens into Solana. I actually think I'm just going to start to accrue the mobile tokens here because I think this is a fantastic buying opportunity right here. It's kind of bottomed out almost at essentially 0.003 per token. And I actually think longer term that this would be a really good place to start accruing mobile. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to be transferring those tokens that I earn on the Helium network into Solana or something else. I'll actually just hold them in mobile. Couple other ones I'm watching. I'm not really going to talk about them very much because they're passive mining tokens that get generated. And as I get those miners online and begin to use them, I will talk more about them. You know, there's things like Dymo, D-I-M-O, and G-O-G-E-O-D, as well as Honey, H-O-N-E-Y, that I'm watching and continue to watch because once I get those passive miners in, I'm going to have a vested stake in those platforms. And they're all also decentralizing kind of networks that take data that's normally aggregated or centrally controlled by, say, like a big tech platform, and it democratizes it almost, decentralizes it amongst each one of the stakeholders. So I'm really excited to get some of those in. There's waiting times because some of these things take a while to get produced and there's, you know, wait list and stuff. So that just is what it is. All right. I'm going to finish by looking at fixed income here. HYG high yield bonds are up today along with the rest of the casino. So, but again, not really showing us one direction or the other for the future. This is a forward looking kind of investment. And so HYG continues to just hover around this same level. And for the most part, it's waiting for clarity, just like some of the other parts of the marketplace are on, you know, what kind of manipulation is coming from the Fed? Is it sooner rather than later? And, you know, what does that look like? What does the time frame and the pacing of that look like? So HYG is up today, but again, it's still sitting in the middle end of this kind of consolidation range. So we're not like risk on or risk off long term just yet from here. And the other thing I'm looking at is the 2-year, 10-year U.S. Treasury spread that's been inverted for a long time now is beginning to close a little bit. Now it's closed a little bit in the past and then widened again. So who knows if there's going to actually be any follow through here. But the thought process being, if the Federal Reserve does start to cut interest rates, the 2-year yield will drop quicker than the 10-year yield will, which should result in the de-inversion of the 2-year, 10-year spread, which, by the way, is just like the first rate cut, is also indicative of the worst losses and the worst financial carnage happen after that de-inversion happens between the 2 and 10-year spread. So something I'm continuing to watch there. It had been hovering at about like 4/10 for a while. Right now it's about 3.5. So we'll see if that continues. And if it does, once it de-inverts, we're closer to the bad times than we are to the good times. So just something to keep in mind there. All right. That's all I really have. A reminder, help me out. If you made it this far, make sure to sub, hit the like and the upvote. Also, sub to the anarchistinvestor.substack.com. I am giving away Bitcoin. May 1st, I will give away 4 $25 equivalents of Bitcoin to people that are subbed for free. And I'm also giving away 1 $100 equivalent of Bitcoin to a paid subscriber. So definitely check that out. At the very least, sub for free so that you're in the running at anarchistinvestor.substack.com. And if you want to, and get the newsletter, that's going to include some of the paid subscriber specific benefits, like the model portfolio I'm putting together, become a paid subscriber, because first of all, there's less paid subscribers than there are free subscribers. So immediately your odds of winning become higher, and you could actually get a full year of subscription for free if you end up winning that $100 worth of Bitcoin on May 1st. So something to keep an eye on and to think about, and hopefully you will be a recipient of the Anarchist Investor newsletter every Monday through Friday going forward. So with that, I appreciate everyone. Thank you so much for your support, continued support, and it's Thursday. Tomorrow's Friday. We're almost there, and I will be alive again tomorrow at noon Eastern, and I'm looking forward to it. Love y'all. Peace.